Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today I am speaking with Dr. Winnie Kiru of Kenya, wildlife biologist, elephant expert, and community and conservation organizer. Winnie, it is such a privilege to speak with you today. Thank you so much for doing the interview with me. My partner, Jen, and I are truly just such longtime admirers of your work. I read your paper, The Sad State of Captive Elephants in Canada, many, many years ago, and it stuck with me as just one of the most powerful, impactful, seminal papers on wildlife in captivity. So thank you so much for doing that.
Well, thank you. I must say that I was surprised when I came to Canada. Some of the facilities we visited were so not what I expected. And I mean, some of them, you could see a lot of effort, but really some of the facilities, I remember very well the Bauman Zoo. Mm-hmm. And one funny one we went to that was called Gazoo. It didn't have elephants, but it was a real gazoo.
It was great.
So well, really made me realize how much work you guys had to do, because there seemed to be a total blackout from a large population in Canada about what was actually going on.
Well, I think you helped elucidate for everybody here what needed to happen with elephants. It's like people didn't even really have a sense of how wrong this was and what elephants' needs truly are. So your paper just, you know, it had a huge impact. And just to give you a little bit of an update, because I think you wrote that paper in 2006. So since that time, there have been a lot of positive changes. So one of them is that elephants used in entertainment acts here, especially circuses, that's almost obsolete now, which is fantastic. I think only in one province in British Columbia out west that last year there were a couple of circus performances with elephants, but that's the only thing that we've heard of in a long time. And the Bowmanville Zoo that you just mentioned has closed down now. Actually, I think the elephants, sadly, I think did pass away before that happened, but there are no elephants there. As you know, the Toronto Zoo had the elephants moved to sanctuary. I believe there was another zoo in, I think it was the Calgary Zoo as well. The elephants were moved to sanctuary. And currently, I believe there's a couple of zoos in Quebec that still have elephants. And the most notorious, we have poor sad Lucy there in the Edmonton Valley Zoo. That's a very sad.
Still there,
all alone. Oh, and Zoo Check is still trying. All that work, and it's a bit of a litigation nightmare, but they have not been able to help poor Lucy. She's alone. So that's the saddest situation. And then, of course, there's African Lion Safari here in Ontario, which is very problematic because they still have so many elephants. But on the whole, I think the public is now very much aware that, you know, these are far-ranging, incredibly, you know, intelligent social animals that do not belong in Canadian zoos. And that's largely attributed to your work and your effort. So thank you.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. It's very good progress indeed. I quite remember it was sad, but I cannot, you know, forget how intense it was. You know, some days just standing there and watching, that Bowmanville Zoo never left me. I mean, I'd never seen an elephant so distressed. Like this female that was there, she had the stiffest, most rigid legs, and she had this strange walk. And every so often, she would kind of push her back leg forward and almost try and rub her ears with it. Like the pads were hurting so badly.
My gosh.
She was so sore. And I just thought, why? Like, why? She was so, so agitated and sore. And I just really, that never left me. That was very, very, very sad.
It's actually fascinating for me to hear you speak about this, because I've never been to Africa. I grew up in Toronto, and I grew up being taken to the Toronto Zoo and being taken to look at the elephants. And to me, that was the normal way to see elephants. That's what was natural. That's where you saw an elephant and in that environment. So you just present such a stark contrast listening to you speak on seeing an elephant in Canada and how, you know, out of place that really is. I think for a lot of Canadian children, seeing certain exotic species, we wouldn't even have that reaction.
Yeah, it's true. You know what? The whole argument that this is important for education falls flat on the face when you realize that you're exposing innocent children to a completely wrong situation. It's like if you took a child to a mental asylum to go and see humans because they're the only people who are vulnerable enough to be put on display. And then you said, oh, baby, look, this is how humans are like. And you're lying because they are laughing when there's nothing to laugh about. And they are walking about when there's no need to because they have no control over their actions. They're basically operating purely out of pain, agitation, anger. Would you say you've educated that child on how humans are like? No, you haven't.
Yes, it's a form of miseducation, absolutely, negative education.
Yeah, that child would be much better off if they never, ever saw an elephant. It would be just fine. They can watch National Geographic films. They can save their whole lives to get to a place where they can actually see elephants doing what elephants do. But to give them the fake sense that you've shown them what an elephant is by showing them an elephant that is living way, way below their natural beauty, grace, and it's just wrong. And yet, you know, they start thinking that education is what matters. And yet there are a lot of African kids who've never seen an elephant and they are never going to. You know, they're never going to because you don't have to. I've never seen a panda and I don't feel that I must. I don't have to. I know how it looks like. I've seen it in textbooks and film shows, but I don't have to see one.
And when animals are just so accessible to us, all in one place, animals that you would never naturally see in one location like that, it does just kind of take away the majesty of the experience of seeing a majestic megafauna species. Never mind what we have going on at African Lion Safari. I'm not sure if they're still having the animals do kind of circus-like tricks, but I do think they still have them participate in pushing logs and going on kind of marches and, you know, all kinds of unnatural, in addition to being in the zoo environment, unnatural behaviors.
Yeah, I'm sure the reason they are breeding is, I remember there was a species survival plan somewhere that said that they needed to breed, they needed to maintain an elephant breeding program so that they could supply zoos and circuses, you know, without having to go to the wild populations. And I'm sure that the breeding program has everything to do with just increasing the numbers of elephants in captive situations, which goes counter to everything we have learned now about elephants. You know, we all know that it's not worth it to have them in captivity. It's just to continue breeding elephants that you have no intention ever of returning to the wild is completely counter to the movement that's growing, the growing movement around the world that says elephants should be wild. Leave them in the wild.
So Winnie, can you explain a little bit for us why elephants are particularly ill-suited to captivity?
Okay, there are many, many things I could say. First of all, you know, elephants have evolved. They've been with us for millions of years. You know, 4 to 6 million years, I think, is how old the modern elephant is in terms of evolutionary time, right? And in that time, the elephant has evolved physiologically, socially, you know, in terms of the way they behave, their physiological needs, their ecological needs. They've evolved to exist in a wide range of climates, habitats, from deserts to mountains, the variable savannas where the seasons change all the time. There's rainfall, there's food, the food moves, you know, they have to follow the food. So they've evolved a complex set of adaptations that allow them to survive for easily 70 years through this very complex habitat. It is unimaginable that one would take such an intelligent and complex being and put it in a little enclosure and hope to stimulate that big brain, that big need for social bonds and the very interesting behaviors that they exhibit. To lock that potential in a room, it's criminal. There's no other way of describing it.
Is that why elephants do particularly poorly or particularly ill-suited for Canadian zoos because of climate issues and they have to spend more time indoors?
Climate is just one of them. I mean, if you think about where elephants are naturally found now in many areas across Africa, these are places that enjoy, you know, seasons of mostly, you know, very reasonably good temperatures. Now, you put an elephant in Quebec where you get sub-zero temperatures for a good time of the year. And, you know, even if you're talking about a temperature of 10 degrees, it's still pretty cold for an elephant. And so you're thinking this animal that is best adapted for climatic zones that are fairly tropical is now put in a place where the temperatures dip quite badly. There's snow, there's ice, the elephant is not moving. And what the result is that they tend to suffer serious problems with their feet because elephants are adapted to keep moving. That is why they have a foot pad that grows constantly because as they move from place to place, the foot pad is slowly wearing away. And we know, observing them, for instance, in Amboseli, that they can move up to 40 kilometers in a day. Average movement is about 25 kilometers. But really, on a bad day, an elephant can walk 200 kilometers. So you can imagine they're adapted to walk so that they can find food, they can find mates, they can find water, they can protect the herd. And so when you put them in this environment, first of all, where the temperatures are so low, they can't move enough. And so they tend to get all these problems with foot pads and they're constantly needing to be cut off and trimmed. And then, of course, they get a lot of diseases between their toes. I've seen some horrible, horrible, horrible images and actually seen elephants suffering hugely from terrible arthritis, terrible foot problems, which are one of the greatest causes of mortality and discomfort in captive elephants. So, yes, indeed, when you put them in those environments, you are completely disregarding their adaptations to the wild where they are adapted to move constantly in search of food, in search of mate, in search of their social groups. And this is why they are always sick.
What a stark contrast now, the picture you're painting and the image I have in my head of the Toronto Zoo exhibit, just how barren really that exhibit always was for the elephants and how small. Very sad. And Winnie, can I ask you, how do elephants do emotionally in captivity? It seems that they're not in captivity, at least in Canada. The elephants that do have company often are not even with blood relatives. It seems that they're not with nearly enough elephants. What is the emotional impact, the psychological impact on elephants from those situations?
I've had the privilege of really not just watching elephant families, but knowing elephant families, because a lot of my study life has been in Amboseli National Park, which hosts the longest studied population of elephants. These are elephants that are individually known. So I can tell you that this family belongs, this is the matriarch, and these are the daughters. these are all the female offspring, these are the young. And I can see those elephants on a regular basis through different seasons of life. And I see how the matriarch leads the family group through the daily fluctuations, you know, day and night, the seasonal fluctuations, lifetime events like matings, but it was an abundant season, so there was a lot of matings going on. Mm-hmm. And to just watch the social group, you know, the matriarch leading her daughter to choose the right male, and seeing how that core family unit participates in all these cycles of life, the mating. And I believe that even when they are birds and deaths, what I loved is elephants exhibiting family behavior. They mourn the dead, they stay together during birth. So you can imagine what it is like. You're torn away from your family as a female. You have nobody to look after, you know. Females are born to nurture. Even when you watch the little growing females in a group, you can see that they naturally look out for their younger siblings. You know, you can see when the herd is moving along, a younger dude looking out for a young sibling. You know, the female to nurture. And here, you tear a female away from her family group, put her in a place maybe with other elephants that are also torn away from their family group. So first of all, this is a group of traumatized elephants, and then put them together and somehow expect this animal that has evolved to know who their relatives are, has learned how to know who their bond groups are, has known who to aggregate with during times of abundance, to put that animal in a place where nothing is familiar, no one is familiar, and somehow expect them to thrive is a bit odd. And that explains why, for instance, rate of breeding in those captive breeding facilities is very low. Mm-hmm. That also explains why the survival rate, when breeding is successful, the survival rate of new calves is extremely low. It explains the level of aggression between the elephants, either female to female or male to female, you know, just, and also something very odd that you would never see in the wild. There are many recorded instances where a female gives birth to a calf and then rejects the calf. That only happens in captive situations. In the wild, elephant mothers will kill you if you get in between them and their calves. So that aggression, that kind of very odd behavior, is only because this elephant is traumatized, has been torn away. We see all the time mothers trying to literally train their daughters how to breastfeed. Here is a female, gets a baby, doesn't have any support, if you want to call it support, and somehow is supposed to know what to do with a baby. While in real elephant society, you're never alone. You know, the female is never alone. There's always other females to help along. If the calf is being a bit silly, there's always a younger sibling, you know, going, stop being silly.
Listening to you describe this, I work on a lot of whale and dolphin captivity issues, and it's a similar set of problems. Taking individual whales from different parts of the world and putting them together in one swimming pool, essentially, and they speak different languages, and they're not with the real family members, and then the aggression increases, and they develop all kinds of psychological problems and physical problems, breeding problems. You think we would learn it's not a good idea.
Yeah. We are too greedy, and you'll agree with me that zoos that have elephants tend to attract larger visitor numbers because elephants are charismatic. People almost everywhere in the world kind of know that elephants are special. And so they are willing to pay to come and see them, even when they are in an environment that doesn't really show their wonderful attributes, but it's really that level of human greed. Elephants are so intelligent that if you harass them enough, you can teach them to do some really amazing tricks. And that is why circuses over the years have taken the trouble to keep elephants in their exhibits, even though elephants are not the easiest animals to keep because they require a lot of food. They can be very aggressive. You know, there are lots and lots of zookeepers and circus guys who've been killed by the very elephants that they purport to love and train, because elephants are very intelligent and they have a mind of their own and they can scheme. So they also can be intimidated into doing all sorts of crazy stuff. So it's all around human greed. I don't think it's the interest is conservation or education. I think the main motivation is commerce. You know, zoo wants to bring numbers. And so they know if you have an elephant, you will have more people going through the gates. That's what I think.
Do you know, Winnie, I was looking at some research and found out that the average amount of time that a zoo visitor spends in front of even the most exciting exhibit, such as the elephant exhibit, is about 15 seconds.
Do you know that is so amazing? Because I think I read something like that and I was completely shocked. But you see, I had the chance to experience this. I went after the Canadian, zoos. I went to a zoo in Los Angeles and there was this elephant that exhibited the most horrible stereotypic behavior, bobbing up and down. And these groups of school kids would come through. And I remember really, wanting to throw the guy, the animator out of the exhibit. I wanted to throw him into the enclosure. You know what he told the kids? He said, what's the elephant doing? Because, people want to see the elephant doing something. The reason they move along is because for most of the time, the elephant's just standing there like, doing nothing, and people want to see the elephant doing something. Right. And so he said, he's jamming to some music in his head. And I thought, yeah, right.
Oh my gosh.
Elephant is exhibiting the worst kind of stereotypic behavior. He's got this big brain that is wired to do great stuff. And what do? You create an enclosure without a single tree. And the only tree in that enclosure is wired with electric wire so that the elephant can't reach it. And the forms of enrichment that are provided, so-called enrichment in that enclosure, are so not what an elephant is created to do. And so the elephant is just there, bored. And I can imagine what goes on with the crossed wires in their brain. Can you imagine the kind of noise that they hear? It's almost like all these nerves are going and the brain is going, please, I want to do something. I want to walk. I want to see my family. I want to go. I'm not made for this stuff. I can just imagine the chronic stress this animal is faced with every single day.
Tragic.
How stupid all that talk about enrichment programming, using food to entertain this elephant. It's no wonder almost everywhere I've been to zoos, the elephants are obese. Mm. Because food is used as a way of entertainment or so-called enrichment.
Can you speak a bit about the claim that funds from zoos support conservation in Africa? So even just looking at the African Lion Safari website this morning before I'm interviewing you, I could see that they're making all kinds of claims about, helping conservation efforts. That, it seems to me, is not the case. Can you speak about that a little bit, Winnie? Does Africa ever see any kind of conservation improvement from efforts of commercialized zoos in foreign countries?
One of the things that really struck me when I visited the zoos in Canada and then again in the US was to just hear the numbers, the figures that people spoke about when they talked of improving the zoo. They'll be talking about millions of dollars. And I kept thinking, even if you spend those millions of dollars, you're never going to have happy elephants. So if you gave $100 million to Amboseli Trust for elephants, and they were able to provide better protection for the elephants, collect research data without, you know, impacting the elephant, you know, just letting elephants be elephants as they collect useful information for, you know, future, what I would say, for future conservation of the elephants, you would be making a bigger impact. I remember very well, there was a project called Discovery, I think, in one of the zoos, I think it was Calgary Zoo, and they said that they were, it was costing them $10 million Canadian dollars as part of the zoo improvement plan. And I was thinking, $10 million.
How far that could go if it was only toward field protection in Africa or anti-poaching efforts.
Kenya Wildlife Service budget for the whole, for a number of years, actually. And I'm thinking, $10 million, it doesn't matter what you do with that money, it's never going to give you happy elephants. It's never going to conserve elephants. It's never going to make elephants in Calgary. Those elephants are never going to go back to the wild. So I'm thinking now of the International Elephant Foundation, which I believe is the funding body of the American Zoo Association. And whenever they put out a call for, it's always small amounts, like $20,000. I think, I stand to be corrected, but I don't remember ever hearing anyone who got $100,000 from the International Elephant Foundation to fund one project. Never. It's always $10,000, $20,000. And then to spend $10 million to build fake things, which to me are more satisfying for the
viewer.
For the human viewer than for the elephant. It's nothing for the elephant.
It's interesting because the first episode of our podcast, I interview Rob Laidlaw of ZooCheck, and it's all about the concept of framing in zoos and how zoos essentially trick visitors into thinking as the zoo is much more natural than it actually is. And the animals, as you've described, they just don't have access to the lush greenery that may be in the surrounding areas, but not in the exhibit itself. So yes, all this money being spent to really fool, you know, well-meaning visitors that are trying to educate their children, expose their children to animals, and not really realizing that they're being fooled, essentially, in many ways.
It's true. The old refurbishment elephant exhibits, those new look exhibits with so-called elephant crossings and Indian areas and African areas have nothing to do with the elephant. Because what would they say to an elephant? Having a tree to play with and bring down the shrubbery and play with it. Having a space big enough to be with calves and males and, you know, a whole so-called herd, having enough space to be able to walk around on grass and then change to sand and move, you know, to different environments, and as an animal, as an elephant is built to do, that's what would excite an elephant. That's what needs to happen. You need to create many different sanctuaries, the type of Tennessee or the one that is run by Paws.
In California, right.
Yes, if you can create 2,700 acres for an elephant to work with, we are together. That is refurbishment. Now that's what I call refurbishment. That is what I call enrichment. But building some crossing that will be used by the people instead of the elephant and creating sounds that sound like Africa, which an elephant can't appreciate, that's not enrichment. That's not refurbishment. That is finding opportunities to make more money by fooling the visitors coming to the zoo. It's a con job, basically.
What is your advice to Canadian parents and just Canadians generally then if they want to teach their children about elephants? What do you believe is the best thing we can do to help elephants here in Canada and all over the world?
I want to say that every Canadian parent should have the courage to say that this is not right. Taking children to the zoo to see elephants is not right. The fact that it has been done over and over and over, their parents took them, the grandparents took them, they did what they thought was right. Now there's so much information. We know so much more about elephants than your grandparents knew, than their parents knew, that the courage to change is what is required. And then once that the families, the parents make that decision, it means they can now form that movement, which will cost the government to make the laws that would eventually lead to the closure of these zoos. So the parents that do not have the courage to make those decisions do not have the spine to change things because they've been done over the years, then we'll just have to change because there is no zoo to take the animals to. So those who change, those who have the courage to make the right decision, will then become the change that elephants need. It may take 10 years, it may take 20 years, but if the change begins at family level, it will multiply. The movement will grow. And those who do not have the courage or the knowledge to change will have no choice but to join the movement. So one day, elephants will thank Canada because there is a growing swell of people that have said, if it's not right, it's not right. Enough is enough.
You just gave me chills saying that. That's really amazing to hear, and I think very important, and will wake a lot of us up here in Canada. It makes me think about our polar bears. I think when Canadians sometimes see images of polar bears, sometimes it will be in the news that there's a polar bear in a shopping mall in China, or that kind of thing. And as Canadians, with all of our space and our love of polar bears, we have most of the polar bears in the world. They're here in Canada. And so we sort of have more of an innate understanding of the needs of a polar bear, but yet something like an elephant, it might not be as natural for us to understand what an elephant needs. So to hear you say that is very inspiring and important, that sometimes we just need to change our behavior in order to truly help conservation, to truly help animal welfare.
And it takes courage, I know. It takes brave families and education. You just need to explain to your child that, yes, it is true that if you went to Grandpa, they'll probably take you to the zoo, but I won't, because now I know. Whether I heard it from Winnie, or I read it in a book, or I saw it on TV, I know that elephants don't belong. And as long as we keep visiting, and the zoo keeps collecting money, and the zoo keeps conning us, and we agree to be conned, this will go on forever. And a lot of social change has happened because some brave people said, sorry, we can't be conned anymore. And slowly, slowly, there's a groundswell of people that want to do the right thing. And you know what I believe is that nature, karma, conspires with those that want to do the right thing.
Winnie, before you go, can you give us a bit of an update on how elephant populations in the wild are doing in Africa and around the world?
There is good news and bad news. What do you want first?
Let's have the good news, and then we'll work on how we can help.
So if I start with like my wonderful Amboseli, the elephants are doing so well. I was there last month for about 5 days, and it was such a delight to watch. Every family had a whole lot of calves, you know, that just tells you that the elephants are happy, they are well fed, they are breeding, they are safe, and so they are thriving. And so you see, when we count the elephants, we realize that they have bounced back from seasons of drought, and they are now surpassing the numbers that we had 10 years ago when we lost about 400 elephants from the drought. Now we've recovered and actually surpassed the numbers that died in that drought. So there's good news out there. You know? And I believe that is the story in some important populations across Africa. The bad news is that there are areas, again, in Africa that continue to lose huge numbers of elephants to poaching because the demand for ivory remains high around the world. Even if, still again, a piece of good news is that since this, we started to effectively see large markets like China closing their ivory trade, the prices of ivory have become quite low, and it means that the ivory trade is no longer that profitable. However, there still remain certain pockets of countries that will consume ivory, and so elephants are still being poached. Ivory is still being trafficked. It is still ending up in Vietnam, in Laos, in Southeast Asia. Many countries are still consuming ivory. There's still a lot of ivory selling on the internet, you know, to people in the most unlikely places in the world. I'm sure even in Canada, there's a huge e-commerce around elephant ivory. And so the struggle continues to secure some of those populations that continue to be under threat because of the ivory trade. In many parts of Africa, we also have the challenge of human-wildlife conflict, the struggle for space. Mm-hmm. And this struggle for space does not in any way mean that Africans don't love elephants. In fact, a lot of African people have many long-standing traditions and stories and cultures that borrow a lot from what they observe from elephants. Indeed, the Maasai believe that the first elephant was actually a young Maasai girl that was walking to her married home, and she did the taboo thing of turning back to look at her mother's home, because in Maasai land, getting married is very important. So, but you get married very young. So they say, if you look back at your mother's home, it is terrible taboo. So this girl looked back and she started to swear her feet, her head. And by the time she got to her married home, she was on all fours and her breasts were hanging down on the ground and she couldn't get married. And so they sent her off to the bush, and that was the first elephant.
Really? Wow. Never heard that.
It's just a myth that tells you that elephants are an integral part of the African culture, our being, our stories. And so we love elephants. However, you know that the world's climate is changing. The rural people are just a lot more vulnerable. They can't afford to lose their crop. And that is why I say, instead of spending $10 million building a bridge that is not going to help elephants, why not spend $10 million helping the rural African people to improve their livelihoods so that they are not so vulnerable anymore and they can tolerate sharing their land with elephants a lot better.
If Canadians want to help Winnie financially, what can we do? Where should we think about giving money? What action can we take?
The first thing is that governments are the ones that have the most money. And you as a Canadian, you pay taxes. And your government has a development agenda for the third world. There is a Canadian aid agency that is constantly supporting projects in Africa. The first thing to do is to demand that the government uses a huge fraction of the money you are paying as a taxpayer to support elephant conservation in Africa. Bilateral aid is the biggest pot of money that is available. As an individual, what can you do? You can access websites of organizations like the Amboseli Trust for Elephants. You can check at their donation channel. Give them something. Even $10 makes a difference because it is a real struggle for us to do research and yet try to help the rural community to improve their livelihoods so that they can tolerate the same elephants that we love so much. We love the people. We know the elephants impact them, but we know it takes a little support to improve their livelihood so that they are not so vulnerable and they can tolerate sharing their space with elephants.
Winnie, it's been such an honor to speak with you today. I really appreciate you giving your time. Thank you so much for teaching us all about elephants and how we can help.
Thank you very much, Kathy. It's very nice talking to you. Mm-hmm.